home, my dear.
Welcome. Oh, you mean it, Everard?
Of course I mean it, Rosamond. But whatever possessed you to come home without letting us know? What happened, nurse?
Her ladyship has been so much better lately that we dreaded the thought of a relapse. So, Matron thought it best to let her have her own way about coming here. We telegraphed Dr. Harrison, who's away for the day, unfortunately.
Is it very wrong of me? I had a sudden feeling that I must get back here to Domini. I wanted to see you again. The people staying here will not mind. You're not angry.
Angry, of course not. Oh. I'm delighted. And as for the people, as you call them, why, they are your guests. Tomorrow you will make friends with them all.
There was a very beautiful woman who passed just now. She looked very angry. Was it because I have come?
Why should it be? You have a right to be.
Oh, but this is wonderful. Will you help me to my room now, please?
Of course.
My dear Everard, you really are a terrible person.
Terrible, Caroline. Why?
Your devotion to the fair sex is flattering, but far too Catholic. Your return to England appears to have done what we understood to be impossible, restored your wife's reason. A fiery-headed Hungarian princess has pursued you down here, and has now gone to her room in a tantrum because you left her to welcome your wife. And there remains our own little flirtation, alas, a discarded thing. You are a very bad lot.
You distress me terribly.
However, tonight you can devote some time to me with a perfectly clear conscience. Prince Ternilov has got my poor husband cornered and is trying to convince him that Germany's intentions toward England are of a particularly dove-like nature. The exquisite Eddie Pelham is playing billiards with your solicitor, and I think everyone else has gone to bed. So, you can devote yourself to soothing my wounded vanity.
Why do you always mock me?
Oh, not always. There was a time before that terrible tragedy when I did not mock.
You were sweetness itself.
Oh, it was all so different then.
What about me? Am I so very different?
Sometimes I find it hard to believe you are the same man.
Why?
Well, to begin with, you have become so precise in your speech. You used to be rather slangy. Then you always used to clip your final G's.
Shocking habit. I cured it by reading aloud in the bush. Now go on, please.
Well, you carry yourself so much more stiffly. And you used to drink whiskey at all hours and quite as much wine as was good for you at dinner time. Now you hardly drink at all. Tell me about Rosamond's return. Is she really recovered, do you think?
Well, I only saw her for a few minutes, but she seemed to be absolutely better, although she's still very frail, of course.
What about that horrible woman?
No, Mrs. Marston, she's gone. Although I hear she's still living in the village.
And the Domini ghost?
Not a single howl all the time that Rosamond has been away.
There is one other thing that I really do...
Dr. Harrison is here, Sir Everard.
I must apologise for disturbing you at such an hour, but I've only just received the news of your wife's return, and I had to see you at once. Oh, I'm sorry, Your Grace, I...
It's not at all. And now, as it's nearly midnight, I will say good night.
Oh, yes. Gentlemen. Good night, Caroline.
Good night, Your Grace.
Sit down, Doctor.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad to tell you my report is good. Except for one hallucination, Lady Domini is now in perfect health, both physically and mentally.
I am glad to hear that. And this, hallucination?
That you are not her husband.
Can a person be perfectly sane and yet be the subject of a hallucination?
Oh, Lady Domini is perfectly sane. And as for the hallucination, well, it's up to you to dispel it.
But how?
Well, if I may speak frankly, to begin with, there are certain obvious changes in you which might well minister to your wife's delusion. During the time that you've been in England, you have revealed an entirely new personality. You are not the same Everard Domini who scuttled out of England all those years ago.
You're excusing my wife.
Oh, she needs no excuses. She has been a long, enduring and faithful woman, suffering a cruel illness brought on by your clumsiness and lack of discretion. It has now become her wish to take her proper place in life.
But if she seriously doubts that I am her husband, how can she do that?
Now, that is the problem you and I have to face. The fact that your wife has been willing to return to you here while still subject to that hallucination is a view of the matter which I can neither discuss nor understand. All her other delusions have gone. She speaks of the ghost of Roger Marston, the cries in the night of his mysterious death, as all part of a painful past. However, she appears to be possessed of a passionate devotion to you, even though she believes you are not her husband. That devotion may lead her to great lengths. Oh, it's a tangled situation, I know, but you've got to deal with it. Keep and encourage your wife's affection if you can, but that affection must never pass certain bounds.
You can rely upon me, Doctor.
Yes, I believe I can, and am glad of it.
But tell me, suppose that this hallucination should pass, and she should suddenly become convinced that I am indeed her husband.
Then that moment will be the beginning of a new life for her.
Who is it?
I cannot sleep. Do you mind if I come in for a few minutes?
Of course not. Come over here and sit down.
You are not afraid of me, then?
Not anymore.
Because all that foolishness is really gone. I know that whatever happened to poor Roger Marston, it was not you who killed him. Oh, I can't think why I ever wanted to hurt you. I am sure that I have always loved you.
Why do you doubt any longer, then, that I am your husband?
But I know you are not. You are so like him, yet so unlike him. He is dead. He died in Africa. Isn't it strange that I should know that? But I do.
Who am I, then?
I do not know. But you are kind to me. It was because I wanted to see you that I would not stay at the nursing home. That must mean I'm very fond of you.
Look at me, Rosamund. Can you not believe that I am really your husband?
No. You are not Everard. But you welcome me home.
And... oh, Rosamund.
My dear.
What the devil?
There, you see. I must go. He will not let me stay.
My God.
Find Squire's number 2 gun, Mr. Middleton.
Look again, lad. He was shooting with it yesterday. It must be here somewhere.
Well, he ain't. I've looked all over.
Ah, Middleton, just the man.
Oh, good morning, sir. Oh, you've got your number 2 gun, then.
Yes. Will you come with me, please?
Yes, sir. Higgs, you get on with that oiling.
Yes, Mr. Middleton.
Now, Middleton, what do you make of those marks under the window?
I can't rightly say, Squire. Was anything heard last night?
I should say, sir. An infernal yell.
Then that was the spirit of Roger Marston. You mark my words. When he do come out of Blackwood, he do call.
Spirits do not leave tracks, Middleton.
They do say that the spirit of Roger Marston have been taken possession of by some sort of great animal that comes here now and then to be fed.
Fed by whom?
Why, by Mrs. Marston.
But Mrs. Marston is no longer living here. You know, Middleton, I'm learning something about spirits. It seems that not only do they make tracks, but they also require feeding. Perhaps, if that is so, they can also feel a charge of shot.
You wouldn't shoot at it, Squire.
I should have done so this morning if I'd had the chance. When the weather's a little drier, I'm going into Blackwood with a rifle.
And as God's above, you'll never come out, Squire.
Well, we shall see. Good morning, sir. Eddie?
Good morning. Good morning.
I hope the very latest thing in ghosts did not disturb anybody.
Well, we all seem to have heard the same thing.
Well, Eddie, if you'd care to investigate, you can bring along a revolver and prowl about with me sometime.
Right, sir. I've always fancied myself as a big game hunter.
We might have fair battle in the wood.
I'm not sure that the character of the wood is not more interesting than the ghost that's supposed to dwell in it, Prince Tarnoff. For generations it's been held to be unclean. It's certainly unsafe. Well, never mind that now. As regards today's shoot, I suggest we gather at 10 o'clock in the gun room.
My friend, you must not allow these local circumstances to occupy too large a share of your thoughts. There is still the matter of the Princess Ida Strom to think of. After all, she has us in her power.
Easy enough for you to say there's only the princess to be considered, but will you kindly tell me what more I can do to make her see reason? Necessity demands that I should be on the best terms with Lady Domini, and that I should not make myself in any way conspicuous with the princess.
I am not sure that the terms you are on with Lady Domini matter very much to anyone, whereas the princess is a grande dame and a diplomatist. I see no reason why you should not marry her secretly in London, in the name of Everard Domini, and then have the ceremony repeated under your rightful name when the mission is over. Prince Ternolov could arrange it at the embassy. He is devoted to her. And bear in mind that it will strengthen your position with him.
Yes, I do see that. Let me think it over and we'll discuss it again soon. Meanwhile, I must go to Lady Domini.
How nice of you to come. I was hoping to see you again before you went off shooting.
You slept well?
Perfectly.
You didn't lie awake thinking of our nocturnal visitor?
Not for one moment. You see, if you were really Everard, then I might be frightened. For some day or other, if Everard were to return here, the spirit of Roger Marston would do him some mischief.
Oh, my dear.
You don't know these things, of course. But Roger was in love with me before I married Everard. Then after I was married, the poor man nearly went out of his mind. He gave up his work and used to haunt the park here. Then Everard caught him. And poor Roger was never seen again. I think that anyone here will tell you that Everard killed him and threw his body into the quagmire in the Black Wood.
I don't believe he did anything of the sort.
Oh, Everard had a most terrible temper. And that night he did come home covered with blood. And it was that night that I was taken in.
Well, no more tragedies. I've come up to remind you that we have guests. When are you coming down to see them?
You say we as though you really were my husband.
You must not tell anyone else your fancy.
I quite understand. I shall be very, very careful. Let me come down after dinner and slip into things gradually. You can say that I'm still an invalid.
Very well. You shall do exactly as you choose. Shall we walk on, Your Excellency?
Von Ragerstein, I am going to give myself the pleasure of calling you by your name. You know my one weakness? I detest espionage in every shape and form. Well, so far as you are concerned, I think your position ridiculous. I have sent a private dispatch to Berlin in which I have expressed that opinion.
So far, I have not been overworked.
That is because there has been no legitimate work for you to do. There will be none.
I must ask you to remember that I simply obey orders.
I will grant that freely, but to continue. I believe that I have brought Germany and England nearer together than they have been since the Boer War. It has been my great pleasure to trace the results of my work in a manuscript of memoirs, which one day I hope will be published.
I should esteem it a great privilege to be given a private reading of your memoirs.
That may be arranged. In the meantime, von Ragerstein, I want you to reconsider your position here.
But my position is not voluntary. I am acting under orders.
Quite so, but things have changed very much during the past months. Why, even at the risk of offending France, England is showing wonderful pliability with regard to our claim in Morocco. Indeed, every prospect of disagreement between our two countries upon any vital matter has now disappeared.
But suppose the desire for war should come not from Downing Street, but from Berlin.
We serve an honorable master. His will is for peace, I am certain.
I saw you talking with the prince. Has he spoken to you concerning me? About your shocking treatment of me, for instance?
Shocking, princess?
It is the mildest word in my vocabulary which I can apply to your treatment of me. Honestly, Leopold, my pride is humbled. I feel bruised.
That is because you look at the matter only from a feminine point of view.
And you, once the fondest of lovers, only from a political one. You think a great deal of your country, Leopold. Have I no claims on you?
Upon Everard Domini, none. When the time comes and Leopold von Ragerstein can claim all that is his right, believe me, you will have no cause to complain of coldness.
But then there is no need to wait. Your sovereign gives you his permission.
I am on the spot.
And believe me, I know what is safest and best. I cannot live as two men.
This is ridiculous. Tonight we must have an understanding once and for all, if I am to carry on.
Yes! What is it, Parkins?
A person of the name of Miller has arrived, sir. Apparently he brings you a message from a Dr. Schmidt, with whom you were once acquainted in Africa.
Does he indeed? Very well, I'll come at once. Please excuse me, Stephanie, my dear, this could be important.
Important? Pah!
Will you send Mr. Seaman to me in the library, please, Parkins?
Yes, sir. Sir Everard Dominey?
That is my name.
I am Miller, a cousin of Dr. Schmidt.
And how is the good doctor?
As always, he is busy, but in excellent health. He sends you this letter.
Thank you.
You were sent for me, I...
Ah. Seaman. Yes, Mr. Miller here has brought a letter from Dr. Schmidt in Africa.
I see.
Let me see. Honorable sir, recommend to your kindness Ludwig Miller, lay before you certain circumstances of which it is advisable for you to have knowledge, in all respects to be trusted, Carl Schmidt. Well, Mr. Miller, what are these certain circumstances? You may speak freely before Mr. Seaman.
My errand here is to warn you that the Englishman you left for dead on the banks of the Blue River has been heard of in other parts of Africa.
Good God!
I hope you've not come all this way just to tell me that. The man is dead.
That is what Dr. Schmidt believed, at first. The man left his camp with enough whiskey to kill him and only a little salt food.
And I found him, deserted by his boys and raving. To silence him forever was a child's task.
The task, however, was unperformed.
I beg your pardon?
From three places in the colony, reports come of him struggling to make his way to the coast.
Does he call himself by his own name?
He does not. Nevertheless, the fact remains, he is in the colony, or was some months ago. I am sent to warn you, in case he should suddenly turn up here.
This is queer news you bring, Miller.
It is news which greatly disturbed Dr. Schmidt.
And if we believed it, this Englishman might walk in here at any moment. How much of this business do you know, Miller?
Nothing. I'm only a messenger. This whole affair has been a great worry to Dr. Schmidt. There are things connected with it that he's never understood. Things he thinks mysterious.
Hence your presence here, Johann Wolf.
That is not my name. I am Miller.
But we have met before, once in Vienna and twice in Krakow.
You are mistaken.
Have you no idea just who you are talking to? Here, look at this badge. Bureau 12. The day is coming.
You mistake me. I know nothing of these things.
Do you intend to stay in these parts long?
A week, perhaps. I spend my holidays here, perhaps.
So, you have nothing to say to me, Wolf?
I have executed my mission. I'm sorry to have caused displeasure.
You must spend the night here, of course, Mr. Miller. Perhaps you could have another talk with Mr. Seaman later.
I shall gladly spend the night here, Excellency, but I do not think I have anything to say that would interest your friend.
Well, what do you think?
I do not know what to think. But there is a great deal that I know. That man is a spy only made use of on special occasions. He is very clever, and his name is Wolf.
And this story, this message he brings.
You ought to be the best judge of that.
I am, without a shadow of a doubt. I threw the body of the man I killed into the Blue River, and I watched it sink.
Well, then his story is a fake. And for some reason or another, we have come under the suspicion of our own secret service. It's ridiculous. I will talk to him again later.
Yes, do. Meanwhile, I promised Eddie Pelham a game of billiards.
Oh, Pelham is an idiot. Why do you bother with him at a time like this? Billiards, my God!
Leopold, I go back to London tomorrow a very miserable and unhappy woman. I take with me the letter which should have brought me happiness. The love for which I sacrificed my life has failed me.
All I pleaded for was delay.
Delay! To think that I should hear Leopold von Reigenstein plead delay. Sometimes I think you are not Leopold. I think you left him somewhere in Africa and came here in his likeness.
Believe that for a little while.
But what if it were true? There are times when I do not recognize you. There are words Leopold used to use which I have never heard from your lips. Is not West Africa a sorcerer's paradise? Perhaps you are an impostor, and the man I love, and who loves me, is still in Africa, in trouble, perhaps ill. You play the part of Everard Dominey like the very king of actors. Perhaps before you came here, you played the part of Leopold. You are not my Leopold. Love cannot die, as you would have me believe.
Now you're coming round to my way of thinking. I have been assuring you from the very first moment we met at the Carlton that I was not your Leopold, that I was Everard Dominy.
I shall put you to the test. Your arm, if you please. Kindly escort me to the gallery.
As you wish. Well, Stephanie?
Kiss me upon the lips, Leopold.
There is no Leopold here.
Kiss me upon the lips.
Very well.
Now I know the truth.
You look worried, my friend.
Yes, trouble grows.
Any more from this fellow Wolf?
No, I'm keeping well away from him tonight, and I advise you to do the same. No, it's the princess again.
You should have treated her in a more human manner, visited her in London.
Once I began, it would have been
the princess could be a danger to our mission. You must not make an enemy of her, whatever you do.
But that's just what I've done. She's gone to her room now, and she's leaving in the morning. She thinks that I've borrowed some African magic, that I've left her lover's soul out there and come home in his body.
Well, if she does go, your troubles are over.
She may do an awful lot of mischief before she goes. Remember, the princess cares nothing for Germany's future.
I had better go to her. You go back into the drawing room and play host.
Good evening, sir. Can I help you?
Oh, yes. I am looking for the person who arrived this evening.
The person from abroad, sir?
Yes. I was told this was his room.
The person you require has left the hall, sir.
Left the hall?
Apparently, sir. I believe he considered his reception here unfavourable. He took advantage of the car which went to the station for the evening papers, sir, and caught the last train.
I see. I don't think I've seen you before.
My name is Reynolds, sir. I am Mr. Pelham's servant.
Well, I am obliged to you for your help, Reynolds.
Oh, thank you, sir. Good night, sir.
Good night.
Wolf gone. This is very odd. Damn. The princess, I forgot.
You asked to speak with me.
Princess, we are in despair at your desertion.
I have been insulted in this house. Tomorrow I leave it.
Your Highness, believe me, I do not wish to presume, but...
Has he sent you to reason with me?
Not directly. I am to a certain extent, however, his major domo in this enterprise. I brought him from Africa. I have watched over him from the start.
Yes, I should imagine Sir Everard finds you very useful.
I hope he does.
It has doubtless occurred to you that our friend has accommodated himself wonderfully well with the English life and customs.
You must remember that he was educated here. Nevertheless, his aptitude has been marvelous.
One might also say supernatural. Tell me, you seem to have been completely successful in the installation of our friend here as Sir Everard Dominy. But what is going to be his real value to you? What work will he do?
We are keeping him for big things. You have seen our gracious master, Sir Kaiser, recently, I understand.
Oh, yes. And before the summer is over, I am to pack my bags and leave England. Oh, yes, I understand.
It is when that time comes that he will be the most use to us. With him as the host of cabinet ministers, of soldiers, of the best brains in the country, our fingers will never leave the pulse of Britain's day-to-day life. Princess, I am here to plead for patience. I am here to implore you to take no rash step.
What are you afraid I shall do?
I am afraid that in some corner of the world, if not in this country, you might whisper a word which would make people wonder what grudge you had against a simple Norfolk baronet. I would not like that word to be spoken in the presence of anyone who knew your history and realized the amazing likeness between Sir Everard Dominy and the Baron von Dragenstein.
I see. Well, Mr. Seaman, I do not think you need have any fears. You see, in a few days' time, I shall leave this country. I have decided to take a long sea voyage.
I say, where's the pink and white immaculate this morning?
Eddie Pelham. He's gone. Telephone call in the night requiring him in town on urgent business. Perhaps his tailor sent for him.
But does Eddie do anything for a living?
Mr. Pelham is the director of the Chelsea Motor Works.
Good Lord. I shall miss him. He distinctly told me that he was going to wear brown today.
He would look nice in brown, don't you think?
Mr. Pelham is not the only person to leave during the night. Our friend Miller, or Wolf, has also disappeared.
Disappeared?
All I can say is that I made up my mind to interview him once more, and I found his door locked, and Mr. Pelham's man, Reynolds, informed me that he had already left on the last train.
All right, I'll make some inquiries.
Yes, do. This affair distresses me because I don't understand it. I believe the man was sent to spy on us, but why? Why has he gone?
Well, I shouldn't worry about it. The fellow seemed quite harmless.
All the same. Oh, but I must tell you that my anxieties have been aroused in another direction.
Oh, not the princess again.
Yes, the princess. I did my best, but I found her in a most peculiar frame of mind. I do hope that she will keep our secret. One thing, though, at least she will be out of the country soon.
Well, that's good news.
Yes, apparently she has decided to take a sea voyage.
Where to?
To Africa.
Africa? Now, why the mischief is she going out there?